Bali Maharaj said, "As you have already stated, the principle of religion that does not hinder one's economic development, sense gratification, fame, and means of livelihood is the real occupational duty of the householder. I also think that this religious principle is correct." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Bali Maharaj's grave answer to Shukracharya is meaningful. Shukracharya stressed that one's material means of livelihood and one's material reputation, sense gratification, and economic development must continue properly. To see to this, is the first duty of a man who is a householder, especially one who is interested in material affairs. If a religious principle does not affect one's material condition, it is to be accepted. At the present time, in this age of Kali, this idea is extremely prominent. No one is prepared to accept any religious principle if it hampers material prosperity. Shukracharya, being a person of this material world, did not know the principles of a devotee. A devotee is determined to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead to his full satisfaction. Anything that hampers such determination should certainly be rejected. This is the principle of bhakti. Anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya varjanam. That's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 22, text 100. To perform devotional service, one must accept only that which is favorable and reject that which is unfavorable. Bali Maharaj had the opportunity to contribute everything he possessed to the lotus feet of Lord Vamana Dev, but Shukracharya was putting forward a material argument to hamper this process of devotional service. Under the circumstances, Bali Maharaj decided that such hindrances should certainly be avoided. In other words, he decided immediately to reject the advice of Shukracharya and go on with his duty. Thus, he gave all his possessions to Lord Vamana Dev. Om Agyana Timanandasya Janan Janan Shalakaya Chakshur Anmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this verse and purport is sufficient to give one material perfection and Krishna conscious perfection. And this is Bali Maharaj's first sentence. The previous verse, it was noted that he paused. He was about to say something very profound. His spiritual master had spoken, and he had to deliberate on what Shukracharya was saying, and he had to be very careful what he said. So he's in a very deliberate, or Prabhupada says here, grave answer. He's in a very deliberate focus of mind. He starts off by actually extolling a very great praise on his spiritual master. He calls him Bhagavata. Interesting, because sometimes we may have the idea that the word Bhagavata, Bhagavan, is only a word used in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and nobody else. And only a pure devotee in our lineage can have the proper title of Bhagavata. But here that word Bhagavata is used to refer to Shukracharya. And in fact, I recall another class I studied one time, I think it was Hiranyakashipu, was also referred to as Bhagavan. So here the word Bhagavata has been used to Shukracharya because he's actually a great man. Not a great man, he's a great spiritual guide, spiritual leader, he's a spiritual master. These are not ordinary people. These are demigods. You can imagine the qualifications of a spiritual master of the demigods. Maybe we can't imagine. It's so hard. We only can relate. What's the word? Amavan manyate jagat. We can only relate with the universe as we relate with each other. I guess the closest we could come to it is, say, someone who's a personal advisor to the prime minister, the spiritual guide of the prime minister. We think that they must be quite qualified, very qualified to have that role. Not just anybody would be chosen. So Shukracharya is the spiritual master of Bali Maharaj. But he says something that Bali Maharaj couldn't agree with. So he calls him Bhagavata, by your greatness. And this is the right approach. Even if we find some flaw with someone who is a senior or even someone who is a peer, there's a certain methodology of how it should be undergone. And here, this is an example of Bali Maharaj's respect. And you use suitably appropriate words. Not flattering words, because flattering words can be an insult. If you say something to somebody that's not truthful, they can feel insulted by that. You have to say something that's truthful. So in this case, a call Shukracharya Bhagavata is not a flattering word. It's a suitable word because he's actually a great person. And Bali Maharaj didn't disagree with anything he said. And this verse confirms that. Satyam, it is true. What you said is truth. And truth is, facts presented as they are for the benefit of others. So what Shukracharya has said is actually applicable and appropriate for actually everyone in the universe. It's a very truthful thing that he said and best noted. Of course, there's something else aspect to this that has also been decided. And so Bali Maharaj is saying that what you've said, you are a great soul, and what you've said is to truth. And it is the dharma, it is the religion of those who are griha medinam, especially the householders. And we'll talk more about that in a little while. Let's talk about the word dharma, because often it's used, and sometimes it's often used. I thought I'd say a few things about some things here. Often it's referred to as religion, and sometimes it's difficult to understand here. When you talk about economic development and sense gratification and livelihoods and fame, one may question, well, why is that religion? We don't ordinarily in our English upbringing relate to that being religion. But from the Vedic perspective, dharma means connected with transcendence. Everything you do is ultimately meant to elevate you to go back to Krishna. And dharma is a word that you cannot, it's a word that means, well, something that Prabhupada says here. It says the constitutional position. Dharma is the constitutional position of something. So the constitutional, these principles of household life is that you could say the constitutional position of a householder. The dharma also means characteristic. The characteristic of a householder is to take care of these things that are listed. If the householder is not doing those things, he is failing in his duties as a householder. He may not be classed as a householder. What kind of man are you? Someone may say something like that. What kind of husband are you if you're not fulfilling these kind of things? So these are the dharma of a grihastha. Or not grihastha, the word is griha medinam. Also dharma means the unchangeable quality. So these are the dharma, this is the duty, this is the religion of a griha medinam, a householder. Now, Prabhupada talks about, he gives another examples. For example, you cannot take sugar, the dharma of sugar is sweetness. For example, if you have something that's not sweet, you say it's not sugar. If anyone has jaundice, you find you eat something sweet and it doesn't taste sweet anymore. Because of your distorted condition, sweet things taste bitter. Chili, the dharma of chili is to be hot. The dharma of stone is to be solid. And the Dharma of light is illumination. So you can't take these things, intrinsic things, away from those products. So Dharma, you define what Dharma is from scripture. So Prabhupada often talks about that sometimes there are different religions, and he lists a whole number of religions. And that can change. Today you can be a Hindu, tomorrow you can be a Christian, tomorrow you can be a Muslim, tomorrow you can be whatever. So then once that can change, so that's not the Dharma. That may be certain rituals you follow or certain procedures you follow. That can change. But the Dharma is to serve God. That you can't take away. So the Dharma of a householder is listed here. So it's true. We can say this. Therefore, Bali Maharaj said, yes, what you're saying is true. These are the Dharma. These are the intrinsic qualities. This is the constitution, the position. These are the characteristics of a Griha Medinam, a householder. And the four things are listed. It's interesting because the first one is artam. And arta, when you do a folio search on arta, you find many uses of the word arta, not necessarily. And the one here, loaded by Prabhupada, the economic development, isn't necessarily the first one that comes up. Gain, wealth, interest, this is arta. And it's also interesting, the word artam means the purpose, the goal. So it's interesting, arta means wealth, economic development, but artam means the purpose of. So you could also say artam kamam yashovritam. So you could say the purpose of Griha Medium life is sense gratification, fame, and economic development, or livelihoods. This is what it means. You cannot take it away. You cannot separate the need of a household. It's also interesting, this is a universal principle. In fact, that's what the word principle means. The word principle is a universal. It's applicable everywhere. It's applicable everywhere. Look at me, I've got the dictionary meaning somewhere. A universal and fundamental law, doctrine, or assumption. Universal and fundamental law, doctrine, or assumption. In other words, wherever you go in society, you'll find these aspects, these principles are applicable to the householders. Economic development. They have to somehow or other improve their lot, develop them. In fact, this is, you could say, one of the aspects of a householder is they're always trying to increase these things more and more. Karma means sense gratification, and we see it very particularly that householders, their whole life, you could say, is manifested around different types of sense gratification. Griha Kshetra Sutta Apta Vritair, the first thing is the house. It's a nice house, and it's the furniture in the house. I was at someone's house recently, and they had one of these big, massive, huge television screens that you felt like you're in some kind of cinema in them. So if you go to household life, everything there is for the comfort. You don't sit on the floor. You sit in a nice, comfortable chair. And the walls are adorned with beautiful pictures, nice scents, and there are children. So the whole duty of a householder is to create facilities for sense gratification. If he doesn't fulfill those aspects of sense gratification, he'll be neglecting his duty as a householder, and he won't be happy. And his wife won't be happy, and the children won't be happy. So his duty is to provide facilities for sense gratification. Yasha, which means reputation. I found that interesting. A householder has to develop, uses money to develop his fame. So I've got some things here. Yasha also means fame, glories, and reputation. We hear that dishonor is worse than death. And this is particularly inapplicable to a Kshatriya. How he is viewed in society is very important to him. He wants to retain his reputation. That we also may recall the story in the Leelamrita, where Sasrut Maharaj kind of confesses an experience he had with Srila Prabhupada, where he had sent a letter to somebody and it was meant to be an enclosure, and he had forgotten to send that enclosure. So Prabhupada chastised him, because by that neglect, Srila Prabhupada's reputation would be affected. So a sannyasi, what does he have? What wealth does he have? He has his reputation. His reputation is very important. So he has to lead a life in a certain way so you don't sully his reputation. Or he doesn't sully his own reputation by neglectful activities. And we know practically that if a sannyasi tarnishes reputation, it sticks. It never goes. It's always there in association. So reputation is a very important thing. I thought maybe you could perhaps share some thoughts. How a householder cultivates, his duty is to cultivate reputation. So what comes to mind?
A big television.
He wants people to come in his house and see it. He's got a big television. A little 6-inch by 6-inch box. He won't get much fame. What else is a householder? He invites Vaishnavas to his house. He wants to be famous. His duty is to be, he wants to be famous as a good feeder of Vaishnavas. He may be thinking, he may want to become famous for it. He may want to do it to get purification. Okay?
One time in Calcutta, we were with Srila Prabhupada, and we passed a big eye hospital. It's a big flashy eye, Wenka or whatever, some guy opened an eye hospital. And Prabhupada said, that actually they have no concern with people with bad eyes. He is simply showing his contemporaries that he has enough money even to waste on that's how much money he has. So the eye hospital was simply to show his reputation. He's very popular, he's done very well in business. We can even own the eye hospital, that's how much money he has. So he said the concern wasn't for the eye, people with the eyes, he has no interest, just simply to show them that he's done well.
Okay, thank you. Any others? Keeping up a good character. A householder has to keep his good character. Any others you can think of?
Nice children.
It's true. Every mother wants to show off her child to everyone else. She wants to become famous for her children, and their education is very important.
Internet access.
Explain, I'm not sure what you mean. Oh, you have to have internet access. I've got a good, nice internet access, a fast broadband speed. Yeah, all these things. You have to have a nice house, a big car. So these are the duties in one sense. It's kind of a material thing. It was the duty of a householder to expend money on developing his reputation in society. It's not his duty to try and defame himself. He's meant to become a good standing. And next one is Vritim. And Vritim is livelihood, engagement. And the meaning of livelihood is, well, it means means of support or sustenance. What is your means of support or sustenance? It's interesting, I saw in one verse in Purport, Prabhupada was talking about the livelihood of a sannyasi. How does a sannyasi, where does he get his livelihood? He gets it from the householders. He has to have some means of support or sustenance. So he travels, he preaches, he begs, different things like that. So households have responsibility to find some means of livelihood. This is their duty. I think I mentioned this sometime. It's kind of a theme that I often
groove into. And one time, a devotee was writing to Prabhupada expressing some despair about his responsibilities as a grihastha. And he seemed to want to not get involved with all the various things that householder requires. So Prabhupada said, what do you think it means to be a householder? He quoted this verse, Griha Kshetra Sutta Aptivritair. He said, this is what householder life means. It means you have to provide a home. You have to provide a house. If you want a wife, immediately you have to think of a home. Griha Kshetra. Then you have to have some means of course, that was a field, because generally that's how you make a living, from agriculture of some sort. You have to have some occupation, Griha Kshetra Sutta. Then there's children. And all the things that they need. They certainly need internet access. They need it 24 hours a day on their palm. Constantly batting away, having 15 conversations, 15 different people, and they cannot put it down. You can torture your children by moving their phone 1 meter away from what they can reach. How long can they tolerate it before they have to... You can't miss anyway, so you have to provide these things, especially nowadays, otherwise they'll feel neglected that you're abused of some sort of their human rights, that they cannot contact their friends at the next moment. So this is the need of a child. So Griha Kshetra Sutta Apta. You have to have some social life. And we know this even from Sati, the story of Sati and Lord Shiva. She wanted to go and visit her family. And she couldn't talk, she see all her family and friends were all flying overhead going to this event, and she wanted to take her husband to this event. So you have to provide some social exchange. If you don't do it, you will not have a happy family. And economic development, accumulation of wealth of some sort, gold, clothing, money in the bank, acquisitions. This is all the duty of a householder. You cannot neglect it. Otherwise, you're not really living a life of a householder and you won't be happy as a householder. So these are the duties. So Bali Maharaj is saying that what you're saying, Shukracharya, is true. This is the dharma of a grihastha. It is the responsibility of a householder to do these things. Now, this word grihamedinam is also interesting, and we should again remind ourselves of it. There's the grihamedinam and then there's the grihastha. And the Medi is something we don't have much experience of in England, certainly, no experience of at all. And more rarely, you may hardly see even in India because of technological progress. A Medi is basically a pole. And then around it, you've got like a flat area. And what you do, you tie some oxen to this pole in the middle and you put your grains on it and they thresh it. They basically walk in a circle, and by their hooves on the ground, they basically separate the grain from the stem. So it's a medi, the pole. So the bulls are tied to this pole. They're fixed to this pole. So a griha medi is someone who's fixed to the pole of his house. And Prabhupada mentions that the grihastha, the griha medi, doesn't go very far from the home. And you see it practically. The householder always has to come back to the home. And as far as he goes, he's always attached to the home by an invisible bond that brings him back. Now, if he doesn't come back, then he obviously breaks that attachment and that's this disturbed household life. Otherwise, he's bound, always coming back to the Medi, the pole in the middle. So he goes a few feet this way, a few feet that way. Interesting, there was one devotee gave a class, Hovana Shinga gave class, and he was mentioning how many years ago people used to travel an hour and a half to work by walking or bullock cart or horse. And he mentioned that today people travel an hour and a half to work by car or train or bus. So nothing's really changed. People are still traveling the same amount of distance. So it's an hour and a half out. An hour and a half out is how far? 6 miles or 60 miles. That's it. You've got to come back to the Griha Medium. So for those who are particularly householders, they're fixed to these things. Now, it's also interesting, and I suppose this is a opportunity to talk about bulls. In those days, it was very much known that bulls were doing a certain thing. Now, I was wondering, how far up the universe do you have to go where you still use bulls for threshing grains? In the heavenly planets, do they do it? They certainly have cows in the heavenly planets. They have cows in the spiritual world. They have cows in the heavenly planets. They also have bulls in the heavenly planets. Lord Shiva rides on a bull. Was it a special bull that Lord Shiva rode on? Or was there a herd of such cows and bulls and Lord Shiva chose one to ride on? Interesting thought. So these are very big animals. Now, we have a choice in our society, because how many people in this world are actually bastions or the champions of cow protection? When you read about cow protection, it's mentioned, Prabhupada talks about in practical ways, drinking milk and working oxen, working bulls, Prabhupada said. Don't use the word oxen, use the word bulls. And Lord Chaitanya, when he was preaching to the Chankasi, he said, the cow is the mother because she gives milk, and the bull is the father because he produces grains. So he produces the grains, and he walks in a circle around the Medi. So what are we to do with that? What are we supposed to do with that statement? Is it something that happened a long time ago? Is it something that was in the past? Is it something that happens in a poor country? Does it have any relevance to us today? How would you do something like that today? Nowadays, if you want grains, you just watch the big combine harvester. It goes in the field. It's got a huge 30-foot cutter blade that just slices through the wheat, gathers it all into a central thing, goes in the machine, it bashes it, separates the grain, pretty much winnows it as well, spews out all this chopped straw at the back, gathers all the clean grain at the top, and a tractor comes and takes it just like that. How would you do it naturally? Well, would you cut it with a sickle? A sickle is this big. You cut it with a sickle, it takes you 40 hours. You cut an acre with a sickle, it'll take you 40 hours to cut an acre. That'll cost you how much? In English terms. If you want to be a householder living in England, what would it cost you to cut an acre with a sickle? £500. It costs a householder in this area £500 a week to live a poor man's life. You can do the maths. So if someone gets less than that, they're getting the rest from the government. But it takes £25,000 a year to be a poor man in this country. So to cut this sickle, 1 acre with a sickle, will take you 1 week's work. It's going to cost you £500 just to sickle this grain. You might not know, but actually, normally, you might get between 1.5 to 2 tons of wheat per acre. So it's going to cost you, let's say, somewhere like £300 a ton just to cut it and put it in a nice bundle. Then you've got the stem. Maybe not people realize, but straw is simply the stem of grain, and the grain is the top bit, which you've got to beat off. So then someone has to bash it off. Got to get the stem, the grain off the stem. How would you do that? This is talking about that process. You'd put the bulls, tie the bulls, you pour the grain, all the straw and the grain in a heap in a circle, and bulls will walk on it. And by that process, they'll just separate the grain from the straw. How long would that take? Anyone ever done that? You've seen it done, okay.
15 hours.
That's another 2 days' work. That's going to cost you another £200. I don't know. I don't know. And that's... Anyway, so we're at £500, £700 now, and that's the grain off. Then you have to winnow it. You've got the grain separated from the stem. Now you've got to get all the chaff off, the fluffy bits. And what do? They chuck it in the air. That's why it's called winnowing, wind owing. And that's why a barn, your mother told you that when you kept the door open? You're not living in a barn, they would say, because the wind would be blowing through. Have you tried it? You open the back door and the front door of your house and the door slams because it creates a draft. Or just kind of, you know, automatically it creates a draft. So in barns were created with these two double doors. So when there's a draft blowing through and you throw up the grain and the wind, the chaff is lighter, so it blows this way and the grain comes straight down. That's how you winnow it. Window it. That takes another 40 hours. And then you've got the grain there. So another 40 hours, another 500 pounds. So you're on 1,000 pounds already to produce your grain. And so that's going to cost you, what's that? That's 10 pounds a kilo. And you haven't even got into a flour stage. So what does our grain cost? Anyone buys flour? What does flour cost from a supermarket?
£2.50
a kilo? Is that correct? 80 pence, £1 a kilo. So you can see that if you want to do things with bulls, naturally, you have to be willing to pay perhaps 10 times the price. So if we want our bulls working to produce grains to fulfill this kind of historic use for them, we have to accept a different types of economics. And I say to you, this is the challenge of why, although we are the society that preaches about cow protection and working bulls, why we don't work many bulls is because we have not accepted this economics. The economics of petrol distorts completely the natural life of working with bulls. Anyway, so this is the Griomedi. He's stuck to the central point of his house as the bulls are stuck around this pole threshing grain. Now, it's also interesting. It creates, you could say, some social controversies. Even now, when we talk about our ox mill, people are worried that the bulls might be on the mill too long, even though we haven't usually done it very much. It's actually broken at the moment. People are concerned, is it healthy? Is it natural? Is it friendly to the animals that they're walking in a circle? So there's a whole bunch of controversies that were so distorted from working with animals that we can't even conceive of them doing work. So Bali Maharaj has stated this is the duty, these are the principles of Grihastha life. But he's about to reject the advice. He's stating it as a truth, and we're going to say, actually, no, there's a higher principle. And this is quoted here. And it's interesting here that this is a... Srila Prabhupada makes a very, you could say, a very powerful sentence. We may sometimes reflect, well, where am I in Krishna consciousness? You know, Adosha, Adata, Tathasara, Sangha, Bhajana, Kriya. I can't remember the whole sequence, but where are we in all this sequence here? Here's a statement by which we can do some self-reflection. A devotee is determined to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead to his full satisfaction. A devotee is determined to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead to his full satisfaction. How are we doing? Measured against that, how are we doing? Well, this a little humbling, I think, probably reflects on that. So, a devotee has got this additional dilemma now, because, as it probably says, anything that hampers such determination should be rejected. And then this quote is there. Anukul yasya sankalpa pratikul yasya vajanam, which is part of this verse spoken by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatana Goswami. And there's more things there, but anusaktasya vishayan means accepting that which is favorable, and pratikul yasya vajanam, rejecting that which is unfavorable. This is a higher principle. So the principles of life, there are principles of a grihastha life, but then the devotee also has to take these considerations also. What is favorable to devotional service, and what is unfavorable to devotees? Yes, this adds to the mix of a householder. Not only has he got to fulfill all his household obligations, He also has to fulfill these devotional obligations. And therefore you have to kind of dovetail these material needs of a householder with the spiritual needs of becoming Krishna conscious. So if you want to decorate your house, you may not have a picture of some mundane thing. You may have a picture of Krishna. You have an altar in your home. You offer your food to Krishna. So you transcendentalize, you sanctify these things by making them focus on your relationship with Krishna. I'll read the other ones out just so you can just remind us of those things. Some of you may know them off by heart. Sorry, I read the wrong thing there. Anukul Yasya Sankalpa, Pratikul Yasya Varjanam, Rakshish Yatiti Vishvaso, Goptritve Baranam Tata, Atma Nikshepa Karpanye, Sadvida Sharanagati. So this is, you could say, New Veda, in a sense. I remember it recently by Sadaputi, who's talking about the Vedas. What is the Chaitanya Charitamrita? It's not one of the original Vedas, not one of the original four Vedas. It's New Veda. It's new authority. So Lord Chaitanya, I couldn't find it. It seems, what I gather, Lord Chaitanya coined these phrases. And they're glad to put it in Hari Bhaktivilas. Maybe someone can clarify it if that's not correct. So he says, anything which assists devotional service should be accepted. Anything that hinders devotional service should be rejected. Having the strong conviction that Krishna will protect me. Accepting that Krishna is the guardian, like the father or husband, master or maintainer. Having a relationship with Krishna like that. Full surrender. Humility. This is called the Sharana Agati, the process of surrender. So, Srila Prabhupada is pointing out here that there's these material requirements, but at the same time, there's a higher spiritual principles. That the principles of the household are universal. They're applicable everywhere, but there are higher principles, which is the principles of devotional service. So here, Bali Maharaj, he accepts the statements of Shukracharya, but he's going to reject it for a higher principle. And he says here, in other words, he decided immediately to reject the advice of Shukracharya and go on with his duty. Thus he gave all his possessions to Lord Vamanadeva. Now, would we be able to do that? He's worked so hard. Imagine, you've worked so hard to fulfill your ambitions. You've worked so hard, you've conquered your home. You've conquered your area of responsibility. In this case, Bali Maharaj has conquered the whole universe. There's nothing else to own. He owns everything. And he's just going to give it all away. Phenomenal, phenomenal story. Okay, so we'll stop there. If anybody has any questions or comments.